December 16th Lawrence Douglas County Planning Commission meeting. Start tonight with just welcoming everybody for being here, taking time out of their evening to be here with us. If you didn't get an agenda, there at the table there as you walk in, if you'd like one. First thing we'll start with are the minutes from our November 18th meeting, and we need to receive and amend or approve those minutes. So, Mr. Struckoff?
I just wanted to, make an amendment to the minutes. My contact with the Douglas County Zoning Officer was initiated by me. The agenda reports that I received a call from Douglas County, but in fact, I initiated that contact. I want to make sure that was clear.
Any other amendments or motions for the minutes? Commissioner Von Hocken?
I move we accept the minutes as presented.
Okay.
As amended.
Okay. Motion by Commissioner Von Hocken and second by Commissioner Kelly. Any further discussion on the amended minutes? Okay. Seeing none, all those in favor of the minutes as amended, please indicate by raising your hand. All those opposed? Minutes pass 8-0. Moving on to committee reports that met over the last month. Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, I might just, on behalf of our ORIAD Design Committee, which Commissioner Josserand and Rasmussen sit on, and two HRC members, keep advising the commission that that's an ongoing effort. We meet about every 2 weeks, to keep working on the ORIAD design guidelines, to prepare it and to get it to a draft form that we can eventually share with the public and the commissions. And that's work that's very much appreciated, because that's about an hour and a half to 2 hour meeting every couple of weeks that the commissioners are putting in. So I just wanted to keep you apprised of that.
Thank you. MPO did meet in November, and we had a small revision to a couple of the items to reconcile the actual costs compared to some of the projected costs. So there's just a couple revisions that we had there at MPO, and we won't reconvene with that committee until after first of the year. Any other committee reports? Okay. Any written communications from the public?
Mr. Chair, we did highlight one public communications that isn't related to a specific item tonight, but we received it. We wanted to get it to you. It relates generally to the camping issue. That's kind of an ongoing issue. We'll report a little bit later that's an ongoing issue that we're working with county staff on, but we gave you that communications.
Okay. any written communications from staff, planning commissioners, or other commissioners?
Staff did provide you a communications related to listing some properties on the local register of historic places, and our code requires us to advise the Planning Commission when that occurs and take any comments you may have. There's no action required. It's a notice item, and if you do have comments, you can let me know. It's also for the public to see, another forum for them to get notice of it through our agenda posting as well.
Okay. Would you take comments at this time, or?
We would.
Okay. Are there any comments on the communication about the historical registries in our agenda? Okay. Hearing none. Move on to any written action of any waiver requests or determination made by the city engineer?
No, sir.
Okay. Disclosure of any ex parte communications. Okay. Hearing none. Move on. Any abstentions from specific agenda items by commissioners in this agenda? Okay. Well, I think with that, we're ready to start with agenda item number one, to preliminary plat. And Mary will be presenting that. So thank you, Mary.
Thank you.
Mary Miller, current planner, and this item is a preliminary plat for the Wakarusa wastewater treatment plat. And it's on property about 537 acres, and it is located kind of southeast of Lawrence. It's shown here with the star. This was annexed and rezoned in 2007. It was an island annexation, and it was rezoned from agricultural and valley channel to the GPIFP, or the general public and institutional use, with the floodplain management regulations overlay district. This was also, there was a preliminary plat for this item at that time as well, and that was approved. However, with the economy slowdown, this item was put on hold, and so the preliminary plat approval expired, as it wasn't a final plat submitted. So we're going back through the process with the preliminary plat again. This shows the zoning in the area. We do have a valley channel surrounding the subject property, and we also have agricultural in the area. These are the land uses. It's primarily agriculture, and there are rural residences in the area, and the red dots are on the structures that are addressed, so those are the ones I took to be residential. It just shows that there are residences in the area, but it's primarily agriculture and open space. This graphic shows the road network in the area. It does have access to the transportation network. This is the principal arterial, by my arrow. The yellow are collector streets. And this is accessed by local roads. However, the green dotted areas, those are minimum maintenance roads, and those cannot be used to serve the facility, so the designation needs to be reversed. Within the interior, you'll see the smaller green dotted lines. Those are being vacated. That right-of-way will be vacated with this preliminary plat. But North 1175 and East 1600 roads that access this will need to be reversed. And that process actually began in 2007, and the county engineer said we can just continue with that. So there's a few steps left to get that reversed, so it'll just become a local road. The preliminary plat is just a one-lot plat. There will be right-of-way dedicated for the adjacent roads. It will actually exceed the required right-of-way, and the utilities department wanted to do that to ensure they had adequate space for all their infrastructure necessary to serve this, to access this property. They are also dedicating utility easements along the roads, and this will accommodate the Rural Water District and the City of Baldwin water lines, as well as other utilities. There may be additional utility easements needed later. As they develop the plant, there may be a need to bring in utilities, and if there are additional easements necessary, they would be dedicated by separate instrument. Staff does recommend approval of the preliminary plat, and you are the decision-making body on preliminary plats. There are some conditions noted in the staff report. Some are minor revisions to the plat, such as the addition of notes regarding sidewalks and the historical sites. There are if public improvements are necessary, the plans would need to be submitted before the final plat could be recorded. The minimum maintenance road designation would need to be reversed. And note that the city would participate in improvements to the adjacent roads when necessary, when development occurs in this area. And the applicant is the city, and we have the utilities department representatives here if you have questions for them.
Thank you, Mary. This is a non-public hearing item, but if there are any members of the public that would like to comment, we would welcome those at this time. And if you're representing yourself, we'd ask that you keep it to 3 minutes. If you're representing a group, please limit your time to 5 minutes. But just wanted to make that available if there's any public comment. Okay. Seeing none. Bring it back up here for any discussions, questions, and or motions by the commissioners. Commissioner Lease?
I move we approve the preliminary plat for the Wakarusa wastewater treatment plant addition, subject to the conditions noted.
There's a motion. Is there a second to the motion? Commissioner Britton, seconds. Further discussion on the motion. Commissioner Von Ocken?
Mary, could you comment on the historical or archaeological site on the area?
Yeah, they had some, there were some archaeological, historical, or cultural sites noted. These could be like WPA culverts and other items. And these were discovered with a survey done earlier on, and I believe the applicant could probably give you more information about that. As we were doing the staff report, we weren't aware, or we didn't have the information that that had already been reported to the State Historical Preservation Office, so that was one of the conditions. And today they gave me a letter showing that that was reported to them back in 2007, and they concurred that these sites were not significant, you know, they could go ahead and develop. However, they told them if you unearth anything archaeological, that you would need to stop and contact them. So if they were working on earth something that they thought was significant, they would need to contact the office. So that will be a condition of approval that we'll put on the plat.
Thank you.
Further discussion and or questions regarding the motion? Hearing none. All those in favor of the motion as presented, please indicate it by raising your hand. All those opposed, please raise your hand. Motion passes 9-0. Okay, moving on to item two, and there are two parts to this. Looks like Mary, you'll be presenting items 2A and 2B.
Mary Miller, current planner, and this item has three components. We have a rezoning request from the RS-10 to the RM-12 with a plan development overlay. We have the preliminary development plan, and we have a variance request from the requirement to dedicate 150 feet of right-of-way for the principal arterial. And in the staff report, we had noted a modification request from the required parking, and that was done early in the process, and then we had published our legal notice, so we left that on the staff report. However, as we went through the process, we discovered they had more than enough parking, so a modification is not necessary. This property is located in the northwest corner of the city. It's actually on the city limits at Peterson Road and Monterey Way intersection. It's in the southwest corner, and it's on approximately 19 acres. Zoning in the area is a blend of city and county zoning. We have residential zoning on all sides of this property. The R1 is the single family dwelling zoning designation in the county. Then we have RS-7, RS-10 zonings around. We have the PRD, which is Hutton Farms, which is developed with a density of about 5.8 dwelling units an acre. And to the south, we have UR, which is urban reserve. That means this property was annexed, but there's been no development proposed yet, and it has a rural residence on it. And this shows the land uses in the area that they are primarily agricultural. I don't mean agricultural. They're primarily rural residential. The rezoning request to the RM-12 district is intended to allow the density that they would need for their project. It also affords us with design control to ensure that the development is compatible with the existing area. With a preliminary development plan or any plan development, the uses that are permitted, even though you may be in a base district such as RS-10 or RM-12 that allows many different uses, the only uses that are actually permitted on this property are the ones that are listed on the preliminary development plan. So we have restrictions on uses beyond what would be with the base zoning. And we also have the design flexibility. We're able to see if we want one-story buildings and what the design of the buildings are. So we have a lot better ability to make sure this project is compatible with the adjacent area. The two uses that are listed on the revised preliminary development plan that I haven't had time to get posted, so these are the two uses, though, that are listed. It's assisted living, and it has an independent living component, but it's still a part of the assisted living facility. And private recreation is they'll have a clubhouse, and then they have outdoor recreation areas for them to walk. This is a elevation they show of the facilities. Along Peterson, there will be two buildings, which will be primarily the assisted living component. The building to the west will be just assisted living. The one to the east will be for those with memory issues, more of an Alzheimer's care unit. And this shows the basic design. And this is examples of a project they have in Columbia, and it shows the building on the bottom that we just had the elevations for, which shows what kind of design they're planning with the windows. It has a very residential look. And also the cottages on the top. These will be the units that'll be on the southern portion away from Peterson Road. And these are for the independent living. These people may be able to drive. They don't need as much assistance, but they're still part of this facility. And staff does recommend approval of the rezoning request and forwarding it to the City Commission with a recommendation for approval based on the findings in the staff report. The preliminary development plan also serves as the preliminary plat. And so this drawing shows the two lots that are being created. The development is only being proposed on the north lot, or lot one. There are three access points being proposed, one on Monterey Way and two on Peterson. And then we have the two buildings along Peterson with the parking area in the front. And then we have the independent living cottages to the south. We have a detention basin between the cottages and Monterey Way. One requirement and one condition you'll note on the staff report was the extension of Spring Hill Drive to Monterey Way. And so they provided a conceptual drawing of this extension, and we'll need to review with the city engineer, but we do have this on this revised plan. Pedestrian connectivity throughout the site is very good. It's all the duplexes are connected. They have sidewalks that connect the facilities to both the street on Peterson and to the sidewalk on Monterey Way. And this shows the landscaping. Another aspect to ensure compatibility is to have landscaping between this use and other uses. The property to the west is zoned RS-10. So even though the buildings are designed residentially, we also have a buffer yard area to the west. And the applicant indicated they're going to try to retain as many of the large trees as possible. And they'll be meeting on site with our forestry manager to determine which trees could be kept. Along Peterson Way, it'll be buffered with a landscaped berm. And then there will be street trees installed along Monterey Way. As I mentioned, there is a variance requested from the requirement to dedicate right-of-way to allow Peterson Road right-of-way to remain at 100 feet. It's in this location up until, I forget the name of the street, but then it actually becomes less and becomes 90 feet on to Iowa Street. The city engineer indicated he had no objection with the variance, as there's no plans to widen Peterson, so we don't need the additional right-of-way. So this is all noted in the staff report, and staff recommends approval of that variance request so that the right-of-way can remain at 100 feet. And staff recommends forwarding the preliminary development plan to the City Commission with a recommendation for approval based on the findings in the staff report and subject to the conditions. And these conditions included a revised downstream sanitary sewer analysis with minor revisions. The city utility engineer indicated it would be acceptable as soon as these minor revisions were made. A gas company approval. There are some grading shown along Monterey Way that would be over their easements. So either the gas company, that's Southern Star and Black Hills Energy, their approval would be required for that grading, or the grading plan would have to be changed. And then a revised preliminary development plan with minor changes. Most of those were very simple things, such as notes. And there were two things that were fairly significant. One was that extension of Spring Hill Drive, so we'll still double check on that alignment. And then the other one was a tractor easement for trees. There is a stand of trees, and there's a graphic in your staff report that shows it in the southern and southwestern corner. And there'll be a site visit to see if these meet the definition in our code of stands of mature trees. And if they do, then they would be placed in a tractor easement so that they could be protected. And the applicant is present today if you have any questions for them.
Thank you, Mary. If the applicant or representatives of the applicant would like to elaborate on staff's presentation, we'd welcome that.
Do I just hit escape? And minimize?
You can just minimize it or close it, and then there's yours.
Okay. Good evening, everyone. My name is Neil Slattery. I'm a staff engineer for AmeriCare. AmeriCare is a senior living company. I've got a lengthy PowerPoint presentation, but I'm going to try to streamline it if that's okay. Staff has given a pretty thorough description of this project. First one up, there's a colored rendering of the project. One correction I guess I would make, with the way this rendering is, north is to the left. So Peterson Road is on the left side, Monterey's on top. And the one correction, just from the staff presentation, is that building closest to the roundabout, the large building, would be the assisted living building. The next building to the west would be the memory care building. And then the smaller buildings to the south would be the independent cottages. I'll scroll through these. You've seen these. These are just plan representations. The question's come up a couple times now. What is assisted living? Assisted living is for that resident that it's making their transition from the home to a facility where they can receive day-to-day assistance with their daily needs, meals, dressing, medication, and so forth. And they no longer can get the amount of care they need from the home place. The next facility to the west that you saw was the memory care building. That's for those residents that start to show early signs of memory issues. There's measures in the buildings that help protect them, door locks, door alarms, a fenced area for activity outside the building, and things like that. As Mary had mentioned, the independent cottages to the rear, that's for that senior resident that's pretty independent. They just probably want to be at a place where they can provide some additional services, but they can come and go pretty much as needed. AmeriCare, give you a little bit of idea about AmeriCare. They've been in operation for 30 years now. They have about 100 facilities in the surrounding five states. 66 plus, almost 70 facilities are in the assisted living part of healthcare. And give you an idea, they're in the states that they operate are in Missouri, Kansas, Illinois, Mississippi, and Tennessee. 15 facilities here in Kansas. As I mentioned, AmeriCare has been providing services for the senior population for 30 years. One thing unique about them is, and that's what this project really kind of we're trying to display, is they don't put in the massive campuses. This is an 84-unit project at full build-out. The first building, I'm going to scroll back real quick to the exhibit. The building up near the roundabout, that's a 30-unit building. The building to the west is, we're planning on building the first 16 units as part of phase one. As the demand increases, then they would increase it to another 16 units. The independent cottages to the rear, those are 10 buildings, and that is 22 units. And that's all at full build out. Phase one is everything you see there except that part of that westernmost kind of U-shaped building. One thing about AmeriCare, typically their projects, unlike some of them in the larger cities, their typical projects on 3 to 5 acres. It's kind of in those transitional areas between residential neighborhoods and heavier uses. It's a good blend of it's desirable to have good access to the site. This is a perfect site for what AmeriCare typically looks for. Two larger use roads, one Peterson Road to the north, Monterey Way to the east, and all within 5 to 10 minutes of commercial office uses. Almost 2 to 3 miles to the downtown area here. So with all within five minutes, 10 minutes away. One thing about AmeriCare, in this setting, it's a residential setting. These are all single story buildings, all residential styles. And I'll show more pictures that kind of implement that. But it gives AmeriCare kind of a more personalized care with the residents that are there. You're not in a facility that may have several hundred residents. I explained why this site, it's on the edge of surrounding residential uses, but it's all within 5 minutes of more heavily traveled tire use development. Forgive me, one thing I wanted to mention, you know, we're prepared to answer a lot of questions if they do come forth. With me in attendance tonight, I have a project architect, Larry Nelson. Larry's been in healthcare design for 40 years, 20 years plus for AmeriCare. Henley Montgomery, head of project development and also part owner in AmeriCare. Next to Henley is Gene Summers. Gene Summers oversees all the assisted living facilities for AmeriCare. So after my presentation, if you do have more questions, we came prepared to answer them. As staff has indicated, the site is 19.3 acres overall, surrounded by a lot of residential use. Some of it already built out, some of it hasn't been developed yet. AmeriCare currently has this project under contract. It is, we're ready to proceed as soon as possible. Site characteristics, Peterson Road to the north, Monterey Way to the east. Going to be developed in two phases. The northern 11 acres is part of this, the plan that was put in front of you, and the remaining southern 8 acres, there's no plans for it at this time. Okay, here, this is what the site looks like. Beautiful site. Mainly consists of open pasture land, a lot of large tree growth. The picture here is you're looking back to the southwest, and the very right side of the, right side of that picture is a tree line. Looking due south off of Peterson Road, same thing here. Looking west on down Peterson Road. There's a stub connection on Monterey Way about halfway down this site. This is looking back to the north up to the roundabout. I bring back up what Mary had already explained. Current zoning under the RS-10 zoning designation, what the permitted uses are, what those uses that would be allowed with a special use permit. The zoning request, the RM-12 zoning, once again, all the allowed or permitted uses or special uses. And then what AmeriCare has come forth to ask for, restricted to specifically assisted living and related uses and the recreational activities on the project. As mentioned, the first phase is the northern 11 acres of the site. Future phase is a little over 8 acres and no plans on it at this time. I won't go into a whole lot of details on the proposed project here, except that a total of 13 buildings, the two large main building, the assisted living building, the memory care building, the independent cottages, and the clubhouse. For the question that always comes up, when are you ready to begin? This is, if everything works right, spring of 2014, if the weather cooperates. Emphasize again, the density on this plan that we put forth in front of you is 4.4 units per acre versus the 12 that would be allowed under the RM zoning designation. One thing I think on the variances being asked for requested as part of this project, one that we are going to go in front of the Board of Zoning Appeals is the signage. Typically, America has a signage that's a little bit larger than what's in the sign code for the city. So that's one other additional variance we're probably going to ask for. I'll kick back real quick that, I don't know if that mouse shows up. Three signs, main monument sign off of Peterson Road right there where the cursor is. One additional, a smaller sign over in front of the memory care. This is just to make sure that the residents or anybody that needs to attend these facilities gets to the right location. The third sign would be the one at this additional connection off of Monterey Way. Here's just going through real quickly. You know, a lot of this is a sea of, even for people that look at this every day, it's a sea of black and white. So, but four floor plans, types of floor plans, building elevation, colored rendering. This is a colored rendering of the building that will be closest to the roundabout, the main assisted living building. More importantly, here's pictures of an existing facility, how they look. Single story, residential character. You can see that they would blend in very well with the surrounding residences. This is one, the problem that I have is I'm always there right after construction. I don't always get there 3 years down the line when everything's developed on landscaping and vegetation, but this is one that was just open within the last 6 to 8 months, if I believe. The assisted living building. The building itself is about 95% brick. Architectural shingles, fiber cement siding, pre-finished aluminum, a lot of the stuff that you'd like to put on your home. This is one that opened last year in the city of Memphis. Picture taken in the middle of winter, so. This is just a little bit of landscaping. You can see the landscaping around. The landscaping plan that was submitted, it's to show the typical representation of what these projects contain. As Mary has indicated, I will be meeting with the city forester to just try to fine tune everything. This is the footprint of the memory care building. As mentioned, it's going to be done in two phases. So we take a typical memory care building, and it's just going to be a mirror image on the side, and building elevation. Because typically, a lot of the communities on these memory care buildings, we've been doing 16 units, but in the larger communities, we're starting to mirror them, to have the ability to increase the size as needed. There's a rendering of the memory care building facility. That's how a memory care facility looks just on 16 units. There's the enclosed courtyard at the rear of the memory care facility. It has cameras, I believe, set on top of the fence. Just for monitoring purposes. Independent living cottages. These are the ones I have on the plan are a duplex or triplex units. The size of the building is 2,200 square feet. Larry, how many square feet per unit?
You said
1,000 or yeah, 750 to 1,000 square feet per unit.
That's right.
Same materials as the main building, predominantly brick, fiber cement siding, pre-finished aluminum, and you can see the sidewalk circulation. That's the triplex building. We are proposing some covered parking on the project. It comes in pretty high demand sometimes by the residents. I get this question a lot, dumpster locations. A dumpster is all brick material, same material as the main building, 6 foot tall. It will be heavily landscaped on three sides to help it blend in more. This is just an aerial view of a similar complex, main building with surrounded by the cottages. Talk about materials, staffing. Just to give you an idea, full build out, 84 units. Maximum staffing at that time will probably be 14, 16. Staff members consisting of an administrator, a director of nursing, a chef, lifestyle activity manager, and the other assistant, the certified medical aides and universal workers. So that's a daytime shift. And that leads, I can get into all, I'm prepared for a lot of detail if necessary, but 56 parking spaces on the main, the front part where the two large buildings are, 22 spaces on the back, on the southern part, and site lighting. I'm gonna go back to pictures just so I can. Site lighting, if you look over top of the dumpster, the question always comes up about spillover onto the adjacent property. Is this going to be lit up like a retail parking lot? The answer is very much the opposite. And the best way to describe it, antique style light poles right there, 12 foot tall maximum, very low illumination level, a high enough illumination to allow the visitor and the resident to feel secure, but not to intrude on the neighbors. And they're spread throughout the development, but with the amount of landscaping and screening, people driving by, they're going to be surprised. I mean, it should not be a hindrance or intrusion on anybody. Signage, as indicated, landscaping. We've shown a typical rendering, a lot of screening, a lot of road trees. I'm prepared to answer a question on deliveries if it comes up. I'll save that one. Traffic around the facility. Right now, under the R10 designation, projected traffic, if this was built out under the current zoning designation of 80 single family homes, almost 800 trips per day. The assisted living use will bring a number down to about 293 trips per day. But unlike just projection out of a design manual, AmeriCare has 60 plus facilities. How much do they really project? About 75 trips per day. People should not notice it at all. Utilities are all readily available to the site. This project will require a public water main extension and a public sanitary sewer main extension up through the project. The necessary plans and permits will be obtained. Stormwater, as Mary had mentioned, there's a large stormwater, an extended dry basin being proposed on Monterey Way on the east side. In the conclusion that I'd like to leave with is that the company behind this project has 30 years experience in the healthcare and the senior living development, and they operate a lot of facilities around the Midwest. They've got the experience. You can see from what was presented to you that we're not coming forth with a large complex with a whole lot of a very high density. Density is 4.6 units per acre. I'm just going to get back to the main rendering. So I guess I'll leave you with that. If there's any questions that you would ask of me or of those that attended with me, we're prepared to answer them.
Thank you very much. What we tend to do just procedurally is we'll take public comment and then provide you as applicant the opportunity to address any of the public questions, and then we'll bring it back up here to the commissioners that may have other questions. So, opportunity. So, as I mentioned, this is a public hearing item. So members of the public that would like to address the commission, please feel free to do so at this time. If you're representing yourself, please limit 3 minutes. If you're ever representing a group, please limit it to 5 minutes. If you could step to the podium and sign in and state your name. Okay. Appreciate it.
I'm Aaron Jones. I own the property 3915 Astor, just to the north of what would be the assisted living right there at the roundabout. It's very, very close to my property. Don't want to lose my trees. It's sure pretty out there, but I am interested in, and I understand this is a assisted living situation, but as far as emergency vehicles, that if there is any, the city or AmeriCare, it doesn't sound like at that skill level there's not skilled nursing. So, you know, fire engines coming through there, as far as noise levels, if there's been anything looked into on that, or that generally is not an issue.
Is that that level?
Sure. Okay. Well, I was assuming at that level, probably not, but I wanted to at least ask. That roundabout can tend to be a little sticky to navigate. It's pretty busy now, and I've seen my share out there, including emergency vehicles that couldn't get through with inclement weather. So just a consideration there. That's pretty much all I had question-wise. So thank you.
Thank you very much. Additional public comment? Hearing none, we'll close the public hearing portion of this discussion and allow the applicant to answer in any questions or concerns that were discussed or asked by the public, if you'd like.
Just the very quick response to his concerns is that all the interior roadways are going to be built to 27 foot wide, the same as a local street, which Spring Hill Drive to the southwest is. Once again, to go back to the projected traffic generation, 75 trips per day, three entrances, northern parts probably 40 trips per day distributed over a 24-hour period. You know, so the amount of traffic going to the roundabout from this project is it's going to be small. And I did look at traffic count up at the roundabout. I did see that a lot of cars were going through, but everything's being designed on this project to be to allow for emergency vehicles or vehicles to come through. We don't see that it will be contributing, or this project will be contributing significantly to the traffic at all.
Thank you. All right. At this point, I'd like to bring it back up to the commission for questions and or discussion about the development plan and the zoning request.
Mary, could you comment on the concerns from the League letter, the League Women Voter letter, about the adequacy of parking, as well as question number two, the what-if scenario?
And I provided that letter to the applicant, so they could probably answer that better than I could. However, on the parking, they're actually providing more parking than is required by code for their use, because they included their employees. So they have provided parking for their employees plus the parking that our code would require for assisted living and independent living, and then they provided some extra. And in our code, if you provide extra parking, typically we require you to mitigate. We try to discourage extra parking, and you need to mitigate if you do extra parking with the pervious pavement or bioswales or some other stormwater management. But they could answer to you about whether or not the parking is enough for their use. And as far as what would happen if the project failed or something, they sold it and someone else would come in, the use is limited by that preliminary development plan to assisted living. So if someone else came in and wanted to do a project, they would need to bring a new preliminary development plan back to you with a new use. And then you would have a chance to approve or not approve their proposed use. So if someone wanted to do multi-dwelling living, you could still require it to be single story, you could still require it to be low density, or if they came back with any of the other uses that are permitted in the RM12 district, you would still have the chance to either approve it or deny it, because it's not listed on the PDP right now.
Thank you.
And would the applicant like to address the parking element of that?
That's a very common question wherever we go. And once again, having 66 to 70 assisted living facilities, we have actual case studies of what the parking requirements are. And uh, Looking at the plan up in front of the two main buildings, I believe, and I don't want to guess, I'll be real quick, I think it's 80 spaces that we are providing, and 56 in the front, 24 in the rear. You can go to any AmeriCare project 10 o'clock in the afternoon. We if it was just the two front buildings, if it was that large assisted building and half of the memory care building, normally we'd have 45 to 50 spaces. You can go to any AmeriCare project at 10 or 11 in the afternoon in the middle of the week, and that parking lot will be a third full. We've always, based on the parking requirements of the community, it's probably 60% more than what's actually used, except on holidays or a weekend with some activities. So I don't, that's probably the best explanation I can give everybody is, you know, it's not speculation. It's not writing out of a design manual on how many parking spaces you need. We have case studies. So, and as I told Mary a little earlier after seeing this letter, we feel confident that the amount of parking provided on the project is adequate. With the additional land, we can always add more if needed. It's far better to add more later, 3 years, 4 years, 5 years down the line, than to put a more impervious surface on the ground and have more downstream impacts on because of stormwater. Beyond the stormwater retention basin, you know, we will be utilizing best management practices. We will be utilizing a lot of different, I'll have to review what measures we will use once we get in further into the design stage. The other question about what if this project goes away? Mary explained that any new applicant would have to come back in front of you and go back through the whole process. It's a common question that does come from some people sometimes in these meetings that, well, you're going to build this project and you're going to be gone in a year. AmeriCare has been in business 30 years, 100 plus facilities. They haven't sold one facility. They typically will do the other thing beyond building their own projects. If there's other providers out there sometimes that are deciding to get out of the business, AmeriCare's purchased their facilities. I that's probably the best reassurance I can give those people that ask that question.
Thank you very much. Further questions and discussions? Motions? Commissioner Josephine?
I've got a couple more questions for you. And it's only because I'm so ignorant about this community or this type of a service. In the independent living portion, I'm going to go the other side. Sometimes individuals, I think, maybe in that classification, maybe those that are still interested in or still will find medical care needs outside of the services immediately there, so they need to go to their doctor's office or visit the hospital or whatever. What's your experience with independent living and how many people don't have cars? And will you guys have a minibus to provide that kind of services to
Ready,
people?
Jean? I want to make sure she didn't show up here for nothing.
Good evening. I'm Jean Summers.
Hi, Jean.
In charge of operations for the division. Often you have a great question. In fact, many don't no longer do drive and prefer not to, or maybe their children have decided that's not in their best interest. So we usually have some type of a bus or a vehicle so that we do periodic transportation. And then we usually look to the community and see what kind of transportation there's also available in the community so that they have an array of choices.
Yeah, that's kind of why I asked the issue, because you guys are so far in the periphery.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure if you're aware of several years ago there was a task force that I was no part of, but it was examining a lot of issues with attracting retirees, senior stuff, but the whole issue of connectedness and transportation, I know, was one of the issues, because that population does need transportation.
Right. We find that in our rural communities.
And I don't think you're going to find the city that only collects, it's an expensive service, and only 5% of it is supported by fees, I mean by tolls. So I don't, you know, you're far out there. So,
right.
So.
Well, we use the, he didn't have any photos, but we do have, you know, one of those community buses or something, one of those mini buses. It kind of depends on the community.
What other services typically in independent living will those residents depend upon from your company? Do they typically meals?
You know, many times, that's why we've now include the clubhouse, because we found that those that are in independent living really want to be connected. Uh-huh. So they generally go to meals at lunchtime. They have a full kitchen in their cottage, yeah. But they come to meals during the lunchtime. In one of ours in Cape Town, the residents have actually do a continental breakfast in the morning and stay and do activities also. They're also connected with an emergency cord, so if they had an emergency situation and wanted to reach out to the community, the assisted living community, they're connected.
So there's a clubhouse in that first building, I take it, then?
Yes. Okay. It's, I want to say it's okay. This one, right? Is it this one or this one?
That one.
It's oh, that I one see. Right there. So that they it's are able to get easily to yeah. To the meals.
There's
and
a
we have found that's
TV
been really
in there, and that's
right.
Where
TV
they hang out
usually
and,
has okay. a wellness space, so they're able to do yeah. Wellness activities. Yeah. And we do a lot of. In fact, it's a very social environment. We have someone who just manages, kind of works with those residents because it yeah. gives them a great excuse to spend the day together.
That's very helpful. You've answered my question. I guess the only other question would really be for Scott. I think one of the first times I've seen PD overlay really being used, since we developers tend to resist that, and I think it makes a lot of sense here, obviously, because you're trying to tie down restrictions on. I'm one that typically doesn't like to see single family converted to multifamily, so the PD does give me a lot of comfort. But let's talk about the undeveloped portion. It would be as proposed in the PD recommendation, so it would have the same restrictions. So 10 years down the road when they want to build traditional single family there, somebody would have to come in and change the overlay district.
Correct. Yeah, it would be zoned RM12-PD, which means the PD affects that
controls.
Property, the entire property. What we would anticipate is that AmeriCare comes in with the next phase and brings that phase forward through the public hearing process, through Planning Commission and City Commission, and then they continue to develop the units as they desire with the use restrictions in place from this action. So it's more of a site planning exercise about setbacks and
that would go location. Through the Planning Commission again, or
yes,
is that something you do at
no,
staff
that would,
level?
That would go through the Planning Commission
okay.
again.
Thank you. That's all.
Further questions? Discussion? Motions? Commissioner Lease?
Since no one else has their hand up, I will move to approve the rezoning request for approximately 19.3 acres from single-dwelling residential district to multi-dwelling residential with planned development overlay. Forwarding that on to the City Commission with a recommendation for approval based on the findings of fact found in the body of the staff report.
There's a motion. Is there a second to the motion? Commissioner Denning, seconds. Further discussion on the motion? Zoning? Hearing none, call for a vote. All those in favor of the motion as presented, please indicate by raising your hand. Any opposed? Same sign. Motion passes 8-9-0. Okay. Item 2B, Commissioner Lease.
Right here. I move to approve the assisted living by AmeriCare preliminary development plan based on the findings of fact presented in the body of the staff report, subject to the conditions listed on our page 108 out of 217. Downstream sanitary sewer analysis, Southern Star and Black Hill Energy approval, etc. So That is my motion.
Do you, Mary, do we want to include the variance in that motion altogether?
All right. Oh, I see. Okay. Let me just start that over to make sure we have it all. All right. I move to approve the variance to allow the right-of-way for Peterson Road to remain at 100 feet in this location based on the findings of fact. Do that separately, or is that good enough? Mm-hmm. Okay. So, with the modification request and staff recommendations. Is that good? Does that do it? Good deal.
There's a first, there's a second to the motion as presented. Commissioner Graham. Seconds. Further discussion on the motion? Okay. Hearing none, all those in favor of the motion as presented, please indicate by raising your hand. Any opposed? Same sign. Motion passes 9-0. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Josserin, if or anybody in attendance, if there are any more questions that you have about AmeriCare, AmeriCareUSA.net, their website. You can see the inside of the facilities. You can see the services offered, and just to show a better.
Good to see you have a rich inventory in Kansas among a number of communities that have significant differences.
Yes. So. Thank you very much.
Thank you. All right. Are we good to move on to item 3 without a break? You guys good? Okay. Item 3 is an update on the text amendment for agritourism regulation and standards. Mary will also be presenting that.
Is this text amendment began, the agritourism text amendment began in 2011, was just recently adopted by resolution into the county zoning regulations. And as we worked through it, we've had 6 that were registered, and then we've identified some issues, and the county commission asked us to come back and rework the regulations and correct those issues that were mainly related to off-site impacts that could be associated with agritourism activities. First, I'll just go over this. Today, we're just doing kind of a brief explanation of the need for the change, and then in January, we'll be bringing back some draft language for you to look at. With the regulations, the current definition of agritourism is the intersection of agriculture and tourism when the public visits rural areas for recreation, education, enjoyment, entertainment, adventure, or relaxation. And agritourism uses the rural experience as a tool for economic development. It's a pretty general definition, but that's it's more refined than the state's. And when a person registers with the county, one of the first steps is to see, does the agritourism use meet our definition? And in the zoning regulations, we have a list of uses, because it always helps to see typical uses. So we have a list of uses to help guide the people making the determination. When the registration is submitted, the Director of Zoning and Codes and the Planning Director both look at it to determine, is this agritourism activity compliant with this definition? If not, then it would not be able to be registered in the county. The applicant has the ability to appeal that to the county commission. So if they disagreed with the director's determination, they do have an avenue to appeal that to the county commission. The intent of the regulations, and in your packet, there was the report and recommendations from the agritourism committee. There were 2 intents. One was to foster and promote agritourism, so we wanted to be facilitative. The other one was to protect public health, safety, and welfare, so we wanted to have some form of regulations. This graphic was in the report and recommendation. This shows the agritourism uses that were registered with the state of Kansas in 2012 when we were doing our report. They're all shown with little green tractors, and there were about 30 of them shown on this exhibit. This graphic shows the ones that have been registered since our regulations went into effect. We have 6. We have the Pinwheel Farm. We have the Shockey Pumpkin Patch. We have Pendleton's Country Market. And we have the Lavender Farm, Washington Creek Lavender Farm. We have a Christmas Tree Farm that I don't I think it's Prairie Elf, but I could be wrong on that. And this is Strawberry Hill Christmas Tree Farm. And so we went through the process fairly smoothly until we had another pumpkin patch with an application down the southeast corner of the county. And the scope and the scale of their project was more, I'll kind of go through the what the required regulations are and then kind of see how that created some issues. The current approval process when you want to register is first you must register your activity with the state of Kansas, and then you register with the county. If the use is found to meet the definition of agritourism, then it could be registered, and we have two ways to go about that. We have administrative, which means the Director of Zoning and Codes can do it administratively, and to be able to do that, you could not have more than 100 people on your site at one time. So if you anticipate your activities will have more than 100 people, then it has to go to the county commission. The Zoning and Codes Director is able to ask for additional information. They can ask for a site plan, something showing parking, sanitation, what plans you have for sanitation. It all depends upon the unique activity that's being proposed. If it needs to go to the county commission, if you have more than 100 people that are to be on site at one time, public notification is required of people within a certain radius, and also for anyone, property owner or resident, on a graveled road between the activity and the nearest paved road, because there could be a lot of impacts just from dust from the traffic with larger activities. And then the current regulations note that the county commission has authority to impose restrictions and conditions in conjunction with their approvals. The activity in the southeast corner, the agritourism activity that was proposed with the Kansas City Pumpkin Patch, it had a nighttime activities that were proposed, a very large parking lot, would hold about 800 cars, a very large structure. And the other thing that went in tied with that is there were very close residential, small residential lots very close to this. And so that these activities could have a big impact on these adjacent properties. So the county commission set a moratorium on agritourism activities, no more registration until the regulations are revised, and we had a study session in which they explained what they wanted staff to do, what the changes they wanted to see. First, they wanted us to establish other parameters. The only current parameter is if there's more than 100 people anticipated to be on site at one time, then that would require county commission approval, and they wanted to see maybe some other parameters. And they had a list, they were listed in the memo, but these would include such things as the location and the proximity to residences. So if you're in an area that has a lot of small residences, or even if you're just very close to a residence, then that might require county commission approval. The type of activity, if you're doing something that could be noisy, a lot of late night activity, exterior lighting at night, that could be one that could be required to go back to the county commission. The types of structures and parking, or the size, and just the nature of the subject property. For instance, if it was on a farm and the agritourism operator lived on the farm, that might be seen differently than if you just have 20 acres that you purchased and it's just going to be for your agritourism activity and no one will be living there, because then you wouldn't be dealing with the impacts yourself. These were some parameters they asked us to set, so we're going to be looking at what kind of parameters could be used to say this might be too big of a scale, or this could just have impact based on its location. In addition, they wanted us to develop standards that could apply to all agritourism activities. These could include buffering, requiring certain types of uses to be a certain distance away from residential residences, parking requirements so that we don't have an overflow onto the parking on the adjacent roadway, and perhaps even traffic studies for very intense uses. And they mentioned the Lewisburg Cider Mill, that's one that it's become so successful that they actually are now going to have to do improvements on the highway that goes there to the adjacent road. And so perhaps there'd be a requirement to participate in road improvements if the agritourism activity did become so successful that now we have to make improvements, they would have to participate or fund those improvements themselves. And so the process we'll be going through is we intend to prepare draft language. We'll hopefully come up with some options. We are having a public meeting on January the 8th at the fire station at 19th and Iowa Street. And we're going to meet with stakeholders, primarily with the people that were impacted with the most recent agritourism activity, to get their input on what they felt were the biggest impacts, what do they feel would have mitigated that, and what processes they might feel would be best, or what standards. Having the people that were more directly involved, I think, will help us come up with better parameters and standards than just trying to theoretically decide those. So we'll develop those. We hope to bring back options rather than just having one set. Hopefully we'll have different options for you to look at, and you know, tell us which ones you'd rather have us take on to the county commission. I think the moratorium goes until April, so we'd want to go back to the county commission in hopefully February, but March at the latest, so that if they have other things they want us to change, we have time to do that before the moratorium expires. And I think maybe there could be some people that were involved with the previous, with the Kansas City Pumpkin Patch that might want to address you. I know they were thinking about attending.
Thank you, Mary. And we would like to take public comment at this time. I know there's no action for us to take on this at this particular time, but would welcome that public input, and then we can have a little further discussion as a commission. But if there are members of the public that would like to make comment or ask questions, we'd welcome that at this time. If you could come to the podium, sign in, and if you're representing yourself, please limit your time to 3 minutes, and if you're representing a group, please limit to 5 minutes. So we'd welcome any public comment or questions.
Good evening. My name is Jim Hendershot. I live at 175B East 2300 Road in Wellsville, and I was one of the neighbors that was very concerned about the Casey Pumpkin Patch. Mary did a very nice job of reviewing what's happened to date. And at our stakeholders meeting in November, one of the items that came up there was looking at tiers of classification, if you will, of different types of events. I remember Commissioner Flory was very concerned with this arbitrary number of 100. Some of the comments that were made is that there could easily be an event with 20 people in attendance that could be just as much or more disruptive to the neighborhood as something with 300 people. So that number of 100 was a little questionable. So what the group, when we met earlier, discussed was, as I said, these tiers of perhaps a tier one or tier two, when you can take the examples that are in the resolution now and try to best fit those in there. It's my position, and I voiced this to that group then, and still is to a large degree, that one of the things the County Commission was struggling with, in my opinion, was their ability or authority to impose conditions upon an application. Being a professional planner, the conditional use permit process, quite simply, works. It gives everyone the ability, the flexibility of that, of imposing conditions or looking at things that may be important in one application but not in another. As I talk to my planning commission in Spring Hill, it's that flexibility that makes it work for not only the applicant but for the neighbors as well. Your code now, your county resolution, is very, very straightforward in that protection of adjoining properties is of very much importance, as well as protection of that agritourism business. And I think the difficult thing we have now is trying to distinguish between what truly is agritourism and, as I said to the county commission earlier, what is a commercial business operating under the disguise of an agritourism business. And that's a very difficult task. Quite honestly, at this point, I don't have those answers, but I think that's some of the things that we're dealing with here. And I and my neighbors are concerned specifically with our neighborhood, but the county as a whole. You know, we've got to get a balance there of protecting both sides. The neighbors that have kids playing in their yard that could possibly have an 8.5 or a parking lot size of 8.5 football fields right next to their property, as well as those legitimate agritourism businesses that are protected under state code and rightfully so.
Wanted you to be aware of the time limitations.
Okay.
If you could conclude, please.
I'll close with that and look forward to participating in the meeting in January. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening. Thank you all for being here. My name is Michelle Coos, and I live around the corner from Jim at 2285 North 200th Road. The proposed location that was covered, she did do a good job of summing it up, except for she did not cover the proposed activities that these folks had in mind. And that's probably where my concern comes in. The guidelines as they are laid out, which I've read and spent more time reading planning stuff for Douglas County than I ever would have imagined that I would have been part of, are pretty vague when you think about it. When you actually look at it, they're really vague. And what I would ask you guys as you review what's brought forth to you is, would you want to live next to a 24-hour-a-day, 7-days-a-week party house? Because right now, the way it's laid out, that's what could happen at our place. We could be facing that. The business that has an agritourism permit that's been brought up was approved to do things such as paintball. And I'd like to know exactly where that falls into agriculture. But that can be done right now under the current guidelines and regulations. So as we're looking over those and participating in those discussions, which we plan on being part of, I would ask that things like that be reviewed as part of what is approved and what isn't approved. Because right now, all of that could go on, and it really doesn't have anything to do with farming or agriculture, paintball. Thank you.
Thank you. Additional public comment?
Sure. Good evening, commissioners. It's a pleasure to see you again, and I want to thank Mary for her presentation. As some of you know, I was involved in forming the Agritourism Committee when I sat on the Planning Commission. I believe it started in January of 2010. We're coming up on 4 years that this has been in the works. And I will submit to you that for the lion's share, it is working perfectly. We've had one applicant that has caused a problem. And with all due respect, it's my understanding that the KC Pumpkin Patch application was denied by the County Commission. Paintball was not approved. Think about the applicants that you've had for agritourism registration in Douglas County. Pinwheel Farm, with the exception of their dispute over camping, which is specifically not addressed in the agritourism text amendment. Pinwheel Farm, Washington Creek Lavender Farm, Pendleton's Farm and Country Market, Shockey's Pumpkin Patch, Prairie Elf Christmas Tree Farm, and Strawberry Hill Christmas Tree Farm. Have any of you heard any complaints about those agritourism activities? I haven't. I haven't seen anything in the newspaper about it. I haven't heard any complaints about those whatsoever. The one that caused problems went to the County Commission and was denied. The process worked perfectly in that case. When we formed the Agritourism Committee, we made sure that we included all stakeholders in the process. We had representatives from the state of Kansas, Department of Agriculture or Economic Development. I can't remember which department they were in because they changed. We included the planning department. So we had planners, we had the county codes personnel, we had township trustees, and we had agritourism operators and those that wanted to be agritourism operators. It was a long and arduous process to get this text amendment in a form that everybody could agree upon. As Mary showed you in the presentation, the current text amendment protects the neighbors in several ways. If it's an activity of more than 100, it does require notice to neighbors within 1,000 feet. It does require notice to all neighbors on a gravel road up to an improved road. It requires adherence to noise ordinances, to parking ordinances, to sanitation rules that are already on the books and in effect. Keep in mind that the goal of the agritourism text amendment is to foster and encourage agritourism, not to include additional layers. If you're going to use a tiered approach, keep in mind that the average wedding is probably around 100 people. We had discussed in committee setting that limit much higher. There was one suggestion of 500 people. I don't expect it to be at that number.
But when you consider what your next action is, keep in mind two things. One is we rejected the idea of the CUP for agritourism uses wholesale. Secondly, when you consider further amendment, ask whether your actions are making agritourism easier and fostering it, or whether your actions are adding more layers of rules. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hurd. Additional public comment? Hearing none, bring it back up here to the commission for questions and discussion. Mr. Duff.
I'm very glad to see Commissioner Hurd here. Because as I was reading this topic, I went, Rick needs to be here. Because obviously I joined the commission after a lot of this work was done. Could I ask you a couple more questions, maybe allow you to expand, sure. Rick? You said in this process you rejected, I'm trying to react to this idea suggested by one of the neighbors that the CUP might be of benefit.
Well, let me start.
Okay.
Let me address it if I could. Okay. I ran out of time, and that was one of my bullet points I was going to try and get to.
We've subpoenaed you. You're on the stand now.
I'll make this brief. I won't use 3 minutes, I promise. And I have absolute respect for Mr. Hendershot and his opinions.
I totally agree. Paintball and bouncy things and 500 people, that isn't agritourism.
No, and that's why it got denied, okay? Yeah. But the issue of the CUP and why that's not appropriate. I'll give you an example of what started this whole thing. As some of you know, I have a vineyard south of town. I'd like to build a winery. I'd like to be an agritourism operator, but I'm not there yet, okay? In studying this and talking to the other wineries in particular, what they told me is, if you have a winery in a tasting room, you're allowed that to do that in agricultural zoning as a matter of right. It requires no permits, nothing. But the minute you sell a wine glass, now you're facing the entire CUP process. That doesn't make sense. Now, I will also tell you that, and especially in dealing with the stakeholders in the meetings, the worst part of the CUP process was, and they looked at me, since I was a planning commissioner, and said, it was me, it was the planning commissioners. It's the CUP process. There's a summary in Mary's presentation about the CUP process. And the way I looked at it, I think your minimum, if everything goes smoothly, 4 months, more than likely 5 or 6. And if I'm exaggerating, I'm sure you guys can correct me. 5 or 6 month process involving expense, time, and trouble for something that could be very simply done. And as you can see from the list of applicants and registrants, we're not talking about paintball. We're talking about agritourism uses. The idea was to make it simpler, to not employ the CUP process, and it was specifically rejected by our committee.
And I remember from the time that we mutually served in this board, occasionally you would want to ship things back to the city and the county because, you know, they need to make a decision, you'd say. And I kind of wondered if that's kind of your view in this particular instance, i.e. the county had the tools, they used them, so it worked right. Is that kind of what I'm...
I'm not sure I understand what you're saying,
Commissioner. Oh, well, occasionally you thought that the county or the city commission or the county commissioners would send us an issue that fundamentally was a decision they had all the tools to already make.
Oh, I understand what you're saying. Well, I don't think they're trying to skirt this issue, okay? I think Commissioner Flory is justifiably concerned about the lack of legal standards for imposing conditions. And tweaking this may make some perfect sense. It was really hard for me to admit, but what came out of the committee and what came out of the county commission was probably a better result than Rick Hurd endorsed at the beginning, okay? And I fully admit that. Somehow the legislative process really does work, and I respect that.
Well, so, and with your knowledge, you know so much more than this. You know, I've struggled as I read this. Well, what do you do if 100's arbitrary? How about 25 rock members of a rock band that want to practice country western songs? You know, That's probably more noxious than the 125 person wedding reception. So it befuddled me how, if I were to sit down with a clean sheet of paper, how I would create standards or tier things.
Well, Commissioner Josserand, if you have a rock band practicing their music loudly, you have a noise ordinance in effect.
In the county?
Yes.
Okay, didn't know that.
We have rules for these things. And what I don't want to see is another 10 pages of rules covering the same territory. And quite frankly, with one exception, the KC Pumpkin Patch, this has not been an issue. And I hate for us to plan for the lowest common denominator. Other questions?
So you're saying that your committee wanted to avoid CUPs for any tier, for any level of activity. Is that what you're saying?
No, I don't. Well, I'm sure that there was a certain point. Mary, you'll have to refresh my memory, but there may have been a certain point where we thought a CUP was appropriate. I don't remember it being that way, but I could be corrected on that. Because
I know we started out thinking that way, but then we had a lot of trouble trying to find that dividing line.
Yeah.
When do you have to go back and get a CUP, and when should it be able to be maybe just a site plan or and so since we weren't able to find that dividing line, we just left it at the 100, taking county commission approval, which is something like a CUP. I mean, you don't get the public hearing before the planning commission, but you do get a public hearing.
At the
and neighbors have a chance to be heard.
What we designed was kind of a mini CUP process for gatherings of over 100. And we thought that was sufficient, that it would make it easier to do agritourism. And quite frankly, there were some of us that were lobbying hard for that number to be 250. Huh. So, you know, it was a compromise. Does that answer your question?
It does.
Okay. Thank you.
Additional questions or discussion or comments that could help staff in putting together their draft language that they'll bring back to us at a later date?
You're talking about questions for staff as well.
You know,
I'm not sure I understand what it is we're trying to do, if not reinvent the wheel in some ways. I hope we try not to do that. That committee that was put together spent a lot of time and effort on this. Are you looking at text amendments that would give the county commission perhaps some guidelines to use in making their decision, or are you looking at opening it up widely? That any kind of agritourism will have to meet new criteria?
I think first they want us to establish parameters so we do set that dividing line, what activities need additional review before the county commission. They don't want it just to be 100 people. So it might be the activity. For instance, the rock band might be something, you know, if we see that it has a potential for noise, the actual activity. And in addition, what is the proximity of residences? So maybe a rock band, if you own 180 acres and you're in the middle of it, is different than if you're adjacent to a lot of small residential lots. So I think the first step would be difficult. It'll be trying to define what those parameters are. When do you need additional review? And I think the second item they want us to do with just general standards might be very helpful. You know, having something about lighting. If you're going to be late at night, maybe that has to go to the county commission if you're going to have exterior lighting. Or even late at night activities, because that's when they have more impact on neighbors. So it's kind of a combination. I don't think we want to reinvent the wheel. I think we're just trying to hone what we have and maybe add to it.
Mr. Chairman, I just add briefly, I mean, this started out with all of these types of uses, if permitted, would be permitted with a conditional use permit. And that was recognized by the commission through the committee that could be an onerous process for what the state was really advocating for and encouraging in counties was agritourism. So we set out with that in mind to try to get through a process that could be sort of onerous on the applicant, but also came with notice and ability to identify impacts, which is also an important part of what we do in planning, right? So what we likely will be looking at then, and so we came up with this sort of mini CUP, as Mr. Hurd mentions, which doesn't come to the Planning Commission at all, goes directly to the county commission, which is a much quicker process. It does come with notice, but that's only triggered by the 100 occupant load. If you don't hit that trigger, there's no notice, and there's no process past the administrative process, which we have done 6 of them that way. So I think that's probably where we look at, see if we're balanced in that. And now we've got some experience. It may be a good exercise to go in and look at our list, which, by the way, the list is on page 153 of your packet, and say, okay, are some of these uses really going to reach an impact level depending on its size? And we don't get to control the size necessarily between, you know, 1 and 100 and such. Are some of them just inherently kind of more impactful? And do they demand further review than administrative? Do they demand notice to adjacent property owners or within 1,000 feet? And I think now that we've got some experience, that's going to be something that staff's going to look at presenting options to you along those kind of lines as well. So I just wanted to add that.
Thank you. And from my perspective, I think that that is what I'd like to see in that draft language is, you know, the general nature of some of those activities and taking that a little further beyond that threshold of the 100 number, but also being mindful and aware and being able to balance not making this so too much of an onerous process. And I know that is a balance there. So I would say that looking at some of those impacts could be helpful for me and hopefully for the rest of the commission and looking at some draft language. Commissioner
Jostern? As I sit around thinking about the issue, it strikes me that the frequency of use is one parameter to help distinguish. A wedding of 300 people that happens once, or even a wedding facility that happens 6 times a year, it's a lot different than pumpkin park that isn't a pumpkin park. That's commercial entertainment. And so, in my view, the connection to agriculture for such an ongoing facility like that, you have to have a stronger case to really demonstrate it is behalf of agriculture. I was thinking of these, weren't there some hunting cabins proposed at one point in time on some property somewhere? See, but that would be agricultural, but it's ongoing, long frequency. But I think you could really prove a strong agritourism connection. I think something more commercial, bouncy machines and paintball, I think they have a much higher bar. And so I think I tend to agree with Rick's observation that a 100 may be too low even for some of this stuff, for the infrequent and particularly for infrequent uses. Just an observation.
Additional discussion? Commissioner Von Ocken?
Mary, can you explain the difference of seasonal sale of products raised on the site and a fruit and vegetable stand?
There's not a whole lot of difference. A seasonal sale of products raised on the site, any farmer can do that at any time. That's part of their agricultural activities. You can go onto a farm and buy anything that they raise. A fruit and vegetable stand, you don't necessarily have to grow it on your own site. You could be selling things that grow elsewhere.
Okay.
You know, other farmers could bring things to you, or you could just sell other items at a fruit and vegetable stand. So
okay.
I think that would be the main difference.
Okay, thank you.
If I may I make one comment, please, regarding the noise?
Sure.
One thing I didn't mention to you all is what I do for a living. I'm a police officer. So one thing I know about is noise ordinances. And with all due respect, sir, because I mean this is no disrespect regarding noise, noise ordinances are near impossible to enforce if you don't give the proper equipment to the law enforcement agencies actually doing that enforcement. They can't do anything about it. The city that I work for has very specific noise ordinances, and we have successfully prosecuted this many cases. And that's not because we don't get called. It's because
You just can't enforce it that easily, and especially not if the law enforcement agencies don't have the proper equipment to do anything about that noise, as in decibel readers, okay? So with all due respect, that rock band of 25, we're gonna hear it out in the country. Noise travels, and there's not much that we can do about it regarding any enforcement. And then one other thing that I'll point out, I applaud you if you own your own land and you're growing your product on your land. The business that was looking at doing business by our property was not growing their own product on the land. They were reselling it. So if something is added, that's one thing I would like to see added, is some kind of regulation regarding how much of that property is actually used for the purposes of agriculture. Because if it's supposed to sustain the family farm, which is how that whole code starts, then that's what they should be doing there, a family farm. Thank you.
Do I get to respond?
Please. Thank you for that input.
I think she's absolutely right in that noise ordinances are hard to enforce. And for those of you that were on the commission when we had the dispute about the Fraternal Order of Police gun range, we learned a lot about that. And you're right, that is difficult to enforce. I don't think that the Lavender Farm has caused any noise problems. I don't think the registrations you've had so far have been that difficult. But I understand that's an issue, and perhaps you want to address that. The one thing that I did want to address, though, real quickly, there is no requirement as an agritourism operator that you grow anything on your land. If you look at that definition, it's the intersection of agricultural and tourism. There are agritourism operators on the edge of the Flint Hills who provide walking trails through the Flint Hills. They don't grow anything that they're selling there. They're providing an experience that draws people out of the city into the country to spend their money. It supports the farmer, it creates sales tax, fills up the hotels. Please don't confuse a requirement of growing something with agritourism. They may or may not have anything to do with each other. Thank you.
Thank you. Commissioner Denning.
Well, but to the degree an application for agritourism is predicated as or is being described as crop related, I think she makes a good point.
Oh, it would be a much easier call, sure.
Well, I mean, just to the degree you measure, back to my point of view, you measure the gravitas of the agricultural connection, I don't think you have to be related to a crop. But if that's the predicate upon which you're making, you ought to grow the pumpkins, not truck them in.
Well, Commissioner, I would say be very careful with the wineries, because there are wineries in Kansas that don't even own a single grapevine. They bring in all of their juice from elsewhere.
Yeah. Well, and is that agritourism?
Yes, sir, it is. It's agriculturally exempt. And unless they sell a wine glass.
And I understand that if you've got a winery, you're going to blend and bring things in. But I'd respectfully disagree. A winery that doesn't grow any grapes, I don't like agritourism, in my personal view.
Okay.
It's a wine producer.
And it's allowed to do it in an agricultural zone as a matter of right without anything further.
Sure. But would I call it agritourism?
If people go there to see the grapes processed, if they truck in grapes from elsewhere and they watch the grapes processed, you get into a real gray area.
Yeah. Commissioner Denny.
Another question for you, sir.
Yes, sir.
In all of the meetings and thinking about this issue, was there any thought given to when does something stop being agritourism and become an amusement park? Or is an amusement park, because it's located on agricultural land and has some, the rides involve cows, was that looked at as being potentially something that's agritourism? Where's that line in time in terms of what the activity is?
No, the question's a valid question, and we struggled with that, to be honest with you. And I think the example that was used in the committee is nobody wants to see a tractor supplied pop up in the country contending it's an agritourism use, okay, even though they sell agricultural equipment. But let me give you an example back. What if that amusement park doesn't involve rides, but it's a petting zoo and it involves farm animals? And children come out to experience seeing what a cow is like. That's an agritourism use. So it's going to be a difficult call in some circumstances. I fully agree. But my hope is that in writing guidelines for the county commission, that you'll give them something to latch onto if it's an abusive situation like these people faced, but preserve keeping it easier to do agritourism in Douglas County. That's my only goal. And quite frankly, I'm tired. This has been a long process.
Other commissioners' comments? Mary, is there anything that you'd like to ask us to elaborate on or more direction at this point?
No, that's all very helpful.
Any other comments? There's no action on this item, so we look forward to further discussions in the near future. All right. We do have one miscellaneous item on our agenda this evening. Mary, you have the honors of all the items tonight, huh?
Today's the Mary Show, okay. And Wednesday it'll be Sandy. Last month when we were doing the CUP for the Pinwheel Farm camping, at the end of your vote to recommend denial, you asked me to return with a memo with procedural options for camping in the county. And we took the Pinwheel Farm CUP to the county commission. There was a valid protest petition, so it required a unanimous vote for approval. So they did vote to deny it, but they did have a discussion on camping. And the county commission felt that camping on private property should be permitted in the county, with some restrictions, you know, some limitations. And so they directed the Zoning and Codes Director to draft an interpretation. The previous Zoning and Codes Director gave us an interpretation that it was not allowed. And so this would be a change in interpretation that would allow camping on private property. And if you remember, you did direct us to look into the possibility of using the mobile home provision in the agricultural section of the code. That said, if you had an employee, someone who's employed on the farm, or someone who's related to you by blood or marriage, they could live on the farm in a mobile home. And the previous Zoning and Codes Director interpreted that to mean that you had to pay them for them to be considered employed on the farm. And the County Commission, during the discussion, determined they thought volunteer workers and interns should also qualify for that. So there will be an interpretation on that as well. So while they denied the CUP, they did open the door for some camping activities in the county. So we haven't had a chance to meet with the Director of Zoning and Codes yet, because for these procedural options, you know, if they included a text amendment or just these interpretations, we'd need to discuss that with her. So when we come back, we have the possible range of options. And there was a letter provided from a member of the public who's interested in camping. It's part of the religious observations that they have with their religion, which was a facet I had never considered. So that was included in your packet. And we will be bringing back a memo also in January that will have some options to look at as far as camping and perhaps the interpretations. We'll have an idea of where those are going.
At this juncture, with that update, knowing that we are going to see this with more detail and further discussion, are there any discussion items or comments that you feel need to be made at this point? Because I think we're at a point, we're premature to have a further discussion at this point, in my opinion. I want to open it up if anybody.
I think it's a good choice. Good call.
Okay. Mary, thank you for that update and look forward to having that on the agenda in January. Okay. Any other business for the commission? Commissioner Lease.
Thank you. I just want to remind everyone that we have a retreat planned. Please make sure your schedule is marked for January 24th, Friday. Please plan on meeting here at lunchtime. We're going to shoot for noon and provide lunch. Please make sure your schedule is clear. That is an entire month and a week away. It's So I would hope everyone be able to do that. It's going to be kind of an exciting process. We're going to start to talk about the next comprehensive plan, and then there will be a social event at the Lease home, as there was last time, with all planning staff invited, as was the case last time. And that will take the place of the normal mid-month.
For January.
That's, yeah, for January.
What about the audience?
All but past planning commissioners. Everyone else in the audience is welcome.
Scott.
Mr. Chair, I have one observation. Last month, I think I introduced you to Travis, our new planner, and we have Jeff Crick here tonight. I'm going to introduce you to him, too, because he is the one that will be doing much of the work on the next comprehensive plan. We're not naming it yet, but the next comprehensive plan. So I want to make sure to introduce you to Jeff.
Thank you. Any other miscellaneous items or other business for the commission this evening? If not, we'll recess until Wednesday, 6:30 p.m. for the second part of our agenda.
Thank you.